Sam.
Thank you. And I have a second half to that answer on copyright, too, which I'll get to in a minute. Those of you who are familiar with vaudeville traditions know that the headliner is the act before the last act, usually someone of the caliber of Woody Allen or Groucho Marx. And the last act is the chaser, the one's meant to get you out of the theater so that the next show can go on. And Tim and I have that honor, so here we are. I am going to be as brief as I'm capable of, which isn't very capable. You could turn this on here. What do I do? Slideshow. There we go. I don't have much here, but I really want to talk about a few things. And close slideshow. I can't hear anything you're saying, but whatever. I don't have that much, so whatever. Upper left from beginning. Oh, I see that. Thank you. That's cute. So I'm here for two purposes. One is to talk about the source guide very fast and to point out the people who have contributed to it. And the other is to do something which I did 2 years ago, and Brenda said to me on Wednesday, quote, not again, which is to talk about our recording preservation plan and our role in it. So I'm going to try to roll through our role as fast as I can. One is just to tell you a little bit about the preservation guide. We have created this. It's an ARSC branding opportunity. It was done with only one or two exceptions by members of ARSC. It's a guide to preservation practices with the intention of the intended audience is those institutions or collectors without expertise in a certain field. There's nothing in here about how to digitize. We think that's very, very well covered in TC04, the YASA document, so there was no reason to attempt to do that. But this was published as a PDF the day before yesterday, and it will be in hard copy available for $30 or so in about a week from the Council on Library and Information Resources, and we're very happy with it. And I'll just say very quickly, there are two chapters in it on copyright. One is an overview of copyright for holders of sound recordings, including collectors. That's chapter 7 by Brandon Butler, and then there's an appendix on fair use in sound recording. So that's the other thing. They can go to Clear and download the whole thing for free. So, how did this thing come about? Who put it together? It's really modeled in part, or at least inspired by the National Film Preservation Foundation's Guide to Film Preservation, which is a wonderful publication. This introduction to film preservation excludes video. It's only celluloid and such. And back in, I can't remember whether it was Seattle or Minneapolis, Clear gave us some funding to have a little group of ARSC members come together and try to create a table of contents for a guide. And many of those people are here. Brandon Burke was on our group, David Soibert, Louise Spear, and it's many of those people who are reviewers and advisors. I don't know whether George was there. Richard Green was certainly on that group, Barbara Need, Brenda Nelson Strauss. In any case, we came up with a table of contents and then sat around sort of looking for funding. Clear didn't have the money to fund it, so it sort of sat. And the whole thing was sort of brought back by the National Recording Preservation Board and a member of ARSC who's not here, Robin Pike, who sort of got together with the Training and Education Committee and pulled together a group of authors. And Maya Lehrman and I came in a sort of what's the word, Maya? We sort of try to meet the deadlines, try to look at the outlines, try to really assure that the authors weren't overlapping each other, try to make sure that people were not were covering what needed to be covered and not covering it twice. And I'm talking about this. I mean, the book speaks for itself, but I'm talking about this really to recognize our authors for what they did. They were paid a nominal amount of money, nothing. The editors weren't paid, and almost nothing. And they worked so hard, and they Everybody was patient with Mai and me, and you know, I don't find people that patient with me for good reason. And all of our authors were, we would go back and say, this is great, but we think we need to cut out this, or we think this should be in another chapter. They say, fine, we'll just put it in another chapter. And everybody was like that. So I just want to go through these authors really fast and introduce them. Curtis was here earlier, and I think he had to go home. Harrison, are you here? Harrison, stand up. I just want you. Harrison did audio formats and did a fabulous guy. You'll see. He has pictures of major formats, and the years in which they were popular. Of course, there's overlap and things like that, and how they deteriorate. And Harrison worked very closely. I'm going to skip ahead just for a second to Carla Artin. Carla also works for Culpeper. Carla did a fabulous chapter on care and maintenance, how to take care of your collection, both if you're an institution and if you're a private collector. So it wasn't just you have to go buy, steel shelving and don't buy anything but the best that's powder coated. It was how mortals like us can take care of our collections better, too. And Harrison and Carla worked very well exchanging material to make sure there wasn't duplication there. I really like talking into the light here. I'm trying to think what, in any case, they just did a fabulous job. And Carla gets the award because the thing came out on Thursday, and the Arschlist has been discussing one of Carla's recommendations. So she's the first one that has one that's started a discussion, which I think is great. Richard has commented on one of Carla's remarks about baking tapes and whether to do it with plastic reels or not. And anyway, so we look forward to these discussions inspired by this. When we're wrong about something, we know you're not going to hesitate to tell us. Well, the PDF will have ways for us to update it. And I think this is one thing I really want to talk about after this, is whether there's a process to keep this thing up to date, to add new information, and as well as to correct information. There's no question that CLEAR, at least in the PDF, will correct things, but I think we want to think about how to add it. So to go back a second, the third chapter is by Maya Lehrman, who worked very hard as an editor. Where are you, Maya? Woohoo! Maya's work is on both deciding what to accept and why to accept it and why not to accept it, but also how to, and also preservation priority. There's not a lot of, original research in this. Maybe there's none. It's work of Mike Casey and Chris Lucinic and people who have discussed these things to try to distill this information for the people. Marcia's not here. Marcia did a fantastic job on cataloging and description. I learned so much, and I think this is something about this. While I say this guide is not for, us necessarily, it is, because there's going to be a chapter, if only the law chapter, that's going to give you information that you weren't aware of. So this is not to sell, it's just to download the law chapter, if nothing else. Is Will still here? Will Chase. Woo. Will's chapter is, as it says, it's on reformatting, but making the decision on reformatting, naming your files, an introduction to some of the metadata, the technical administrative metadata. Will worked very closely with Chris so that they wouldn't duplicate each other. Chris Lucinic, who did the next chapter. There's just a lot of content there, and thank you. Again, Will, somebody who just worked with the other authors. They were just fabulous. Chris is not here, is he? But other AV Preserve people, probably people who did it for him, although, no, that's not true. Chris was great, and there's an awful lot of information about choosing your long-term storage. I would say, well, Chris, we need something for, give people something, an alternative to it. And he said, no, that's going to enable bad practices. And he was right. So there's a little bit of hints about bad practices, or at least, instead of a big repository, but this was, you'll find this a really useful chapter, I think. Brandon Butler is an attorney was an attorney for the Association of Research Libraries. He's now at the American University Center for a Study of Copyright and Intellectual Property or something, and he did our basics of law, copyright law for archives, and did a wonderful job. And last and not least, Kara Van Melsen, who also from AV Preserve did a fabulous chapter on preparation for disasters and recovery for disasters. And what AV Preserve learned from Hurricane Sandy and their response work for that. And I think that's very interesting, and again, learned a lot from that. And then finally, as an appendix, Peter Yossi and Brandon Butler collaborated on a guide to fair use for archives. This is another recommendation in the recording preservation plan, and it was going to be published as only as a PDF and not in the bound work, but it is in the bound work, which I'm really grateful to Clear for that. And I have to say that you'll note there were four editors, Robin, Maya, myself, and Kathleen Smith from Clear, and I can't speak more highly of Clear. They wanted this project from way back in Seattle or in Minneapolis. 7 or 8 years ago, they were behind it. They've been supported. They were working off, you know, I would write Kathleen an email at, 8 or 9 and get a response at midnight, working so hard on this. It was fabulous. So one other thing I wanted to add to Will's chapter, Chris Lacinic and AV Preserve have put out a model RFP. The idea of this book is the audience would be people who are generally outsourcing things. So an RFP, what an RFP might say when you're looking for a vendor, Chris put it out, and I showed you the acknowledgments in the beginning because there were a lot of contributors, and then George Blood worked with Chris. George commented on it, and it was better as a result. So this is just a big cooperative effort. It's out there. It has our name on it. Hopefully it won't embarrass us. If it does, blame the editors. You know, not the authors have just been fabulous. And I want to thank you all again. Thank you. And now, I know there's not a lot of time. I want to speak really quickly about what I did, what Brenda calls the not again talk about the recording preservation plan. Tim said we're on last. I don't know who's going to be there for our last thing, but we should give out door prizes. So we too have two door prizes that I picked off the table. Who wants a preservation plan? I see two hands back there. You're the first two, and these are yours. Brad McCoy was nice enough to have a box shipped here. So come and get them, and there's also a set of plates for you in the back. So on the plan, what I really wanted to talk about, it was what's been accomplished in the plan, and what... and why you should look at my slides again. What's been accomplished in the plan, and actually what's in the plan, and I really been thinking about going through what's been started, what's accomplished, what does ARSC as a body want to see done? I mean, I think ARSC, our membership, has had input into these points. They weren't just done by someone in Washington, with their head in the clouds. It was Brendan Bloomington with her head in the clouds, and she represents, middle America. She knew what we wanted, and really, there was a lot of input. So a lot of these things, a few have been accomplished, several have been started, and several haven't. Several of them are way beyond what we can do. I don't think ARSC is going to construct controlled storage facilities for collections, but maybe we will. If we can keep Rooster Cayley here, if you build something, he'll store it for you, right? But anyway, as I said, what does ARSC want, and what is ARSC capable of doing? And I'm asking you that. And I probably should have been on at the beginning of the program, but then, they didn't want to chase people out then, so they put me at the end. And we really, in order to think about what we could and what we should be doing, one thing about it is, we'll go through these, but as I mentioned, this guide to preservation, if you look at the PDF or think about it, how should it be updated? Where should it be updated? There are certain things in it that are, that might be, we have new research that refutes things. There might be new tools for people. There should be a place to supplement the PDFs, and CLEAR and or the Library of Congress are welcome to host that. So I just want to go through these recommendations you remember them. I'm not going to repeat them. But what I've done is I've put in red ones. I got my crayons out today, and I sort of colored them. It was fun. And the ones in red here, things that we might think about. What collaborations for outsourcing preservation services? We know from you vendors here that it's a lot cheaper for someone to, per item, to copy 200, 500 cassettes than it is to send you 10 cassettes. We've talked about having some sort of ARSC initiative to pull together bodies of work to get digitized at one time, normalize the metadata to get the best per item cost. Might be something you want to do, it might not. As I said, I'm just going to go through these fast if I can, I have to put on my glasses to do it. There we go. All right, well. I'm probably not in the document. Well, whatever. So you might be out earlier than you thought. There is a education component of the plan. We need more education plans. We're not going to offer university courses, but maybe we are already offering things on continuing education programs, which is what our ENT committee is doing. But what other kinds of things, if not the ENT committee, the technical committee, to work for continuing education? So things that are sort of underway, my crayons are in, I think they're with the gray background, as in recommended 1.5 here. The other is the recommended 1.6 red is something that ARSH might consider. This didn't make it in the plan, but I always thought it'd be great if some volunteer, and I always think about graduate students with interest in our field, were to go through the ARSH list and pull out the most interesting discussions and put them in one place where you can follow threads and you don't have to read the jokes, you don't have to read the people who say, I agree, but you might have the conflict. I was thinking there was something very interesting recently. It was on... it wasn't on ADD converters, but it was a long thread, and it ended up being very, I thought, educational. I learned from it. New technologies, again, what does ARSH think is needed in terms of scientific research? We've talked a lot about this with cylinder copying. You know, what do we still need to know about cylinder copying? There's some controversy about whether playing the cylinder hurts or not. It was proposed the other day that it doesn't hurt at all if you do it right. Some people disagree, but we don't have the material science. We all know we're in need of material science, and I think this is a case where if ARSC doesn't have the resources to do it, this is a place where a group from ARSC should go to the Library of Congress and say, this is where funding should go, this is what the Library of Congress Preservation Testing Office should do. It's just things like that. Documentation of legacy technology. Is Tom Fine still here? No, but the library has started putting up technical manuals. I don't know whether you know that, but on the NRPB website are hundreds of technical manuals, both sales brochures and schematics for legacy equipment. And I know Tom has his own collection. Might be something to put together. One of the members of Brenda's committees on the preservation plan really thought that we needed a directory of hardware. You know, where could you find this machine that can only play, a machine that can play an L cassette or whatever? I don't know if that's needed, but it's be something that we need to have our voice heard about whether it should be a priority or not. In black are things that are actually been done, and as you know from the session earlier, if you're able to attend it with Brad McCoy, that a technical committee has been doing interviews with expert engineers. Richard Hess and David Giovannoni have made videos, and they will be available for free. These are just things we have guides to vendors on our website. Do we need guides to people who can help people evaluate collections? Do we need advice on? I just want to get these out, and I'm not going to take up too much more time, but just for you all to think about what should be done. What tools are needed for best practices? We've done a lot on that. We haven't necessarily done it as ARSC, but AV Preserve has done so much, as you heard today. What's missing? What are the missing things? This is something, as I said, the Library of Congress has a little bit of money to commission these things. The way they commission the preservation guide, they commission one of the improvement and enhancement of the AV Preserve tool. There's a limited amount of funds, and I think our voice should be heard about what's needed. Is metadata being standardized? In some cases it is, because these tools only offer so many fields. You know, you're only filling in so many fields, so by default they're being standardized. But again, you know, just do we have enough tools for fixity and things like that for long term? I really just, you know, want you all to think about it and then leave you. But, you know, it brings up something very important to me, and I think that Jenny is thinking about it is the old ARSC Associated Archives Committee. The institutions or those with large collections that are managing them, we don't have a formal way within ARSC to agree on those things. Something to think about. The Directory of Collections, Will, are you here? William, are you here? There he is. William is working on that. He gave a presentation. I don't know if he was able to join with the radio folks, but again, I think there's a potential for that. As you know, we have a cataloging committee. They met today, and maybe they're going to come up with best practices for audio cataloging. Federal copyright, you just heard, but this is, again, it's in gray. We've started. We've done what we can. Tim, you know, as I heard from a member of the chief staff member for the Democratic side of the Judiciary Committee said, you all need to be at the table. And that's important, and that's because of Tim's work. They do recognize it. They don't, you know, we're not going to control the conversation because we don't give any money to anybody, but he says you need to be at the table. Licensing for streaming. This is something an MLA and IMLS grant to the University of Washington is going, these end-user license problems. We need to, you know, this is in all of our interests, those who work for institutions, so that we can preserve this stuff. In the first chapter of the guide, talks about this as a major preservation challenge ahead of us. The fact that there are no artifacts being produced, you know, they're not producing carriers. They're producing just streams, and they're crappy streams for, in large part. We haven't gotten to many high-quality streams yet. So being part of that. A preservation network is something that Brewster Kelly talked about. We might do more. We've talked about an online labels ownership registry. Is that something of interest to you members? To when you pick up a record on the whatever label, if you don't own a copy of Knox and Sutton's Guide to Labels and you want to know who owns Puritan or something, is this something that would be of value? If it is, you know, Steve Smolian started work. Sound Exchange has said they're interested in it. Anyway, I'm just leaving you with these. You should go through this yourself. We've done the best practices for fair use. It's in the new guide. It's not lawyers telling us what the best practices are. It's the result of their interviews with the community and hearing what institutions and individuals are doing. But it gives you a lot of guidance of what you can do. And as you all know, we're not, you know, Section 108, the part of copyright law that is supposed to guide us in preservation is useless for sound recordings. It's only through fair use. And I would like to see more collaboration on coordinating national collections policy. We all can't collect everything. I was talking to a member today that says that she sees a lot less use of her institutional collection because the kids said, just go to YouTube. Faculty's going to YouTube. So, you know, we all don't need to be, I mean, it doesn't mean we shouldn't be collecting recordings, but we certainly shouldn't be collecting the same recordings. And that's it. I mean, the board established a subcommittee, and I can't, Josh isn't here, is he? Josh Shepard, who works with Chris Sterling. Yes, well, I can't, Josh, stand up, because I don't know if you are able to get to the radio presentation yesterday. I was chair of the National Recording Preservation Board for 2 years until tomorrow, it's over, and I set up a radio subcommittee, and I have never seen a committee jump and accomplish so much so fast as what Josh Shepard has done with Chris Sterling, and they've gathered together a group of 170 radio scholars. There'll be a conference in Washington in about a year. It's a model, and I just want to thank you, Josh. I'm really, really excited about it. They've really accomplished a lot. They're going to survey collections. They're going to think about the copyright issues and things, and Chuck Howell's on it. This is just great to see. So I'm going to leave you with that on that high note. We're just starting. This is going to go on and on. We're not going to solve this. And hearing the numbers of the amounts of sound recordings that need to be preserved is sobering. But we can't let that discourage us and give up. It's people like Josh and these authors and all of you who have worked on different kinds of preservation and access things, which I think ARSC has to be enormously proud of what we've accomplished. It's a rather informal group. So congratulations to you all, and thank you.